This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
It's time for AgriChat, the official podcast of the Tales of the Agronaut blog and stalwart gaming community, where we talk about stuff and things, and the stuff about the things, and sometimes gaming. I'm Belgast, and let's start the show. Hey folks, it's that time again, time for another episode of AgriChat. This is episode 162. Tonight, I'm joined by Ashgar.
Hi.
Grace.
Hello.
Kodra.
Howdy.
Tam.
Hello.
And Thalen.
Hi there.
So, we lied to you.
Get over it.
We said last week we would be recording the Game of the Month show, but we're postponing it by another week. Because reasons.
Are those reasons Stormblood?
Those reasons are largely because Stormblood became playable.
There's also a new content drop for said game that adds extra tentacles.
So, hooray! You
know, there's that.
All the tentacles!
So yeah, I'll be talking about Subnautica next week.
I think, like, for the most part, other than Thalen, all of us have been deeply engaged in Stormblood this week.
Yes, and a lot less angry at it than we were last week.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
I'm actually the opposite. I'm actually slightly more angry at it than I was last week, but I was super, super positive on it last week because I had done a different thing and hadn't run into the problems that everybody else had.
Something, something, Red Mage.
Yes.
So why are you more angry at it this week?
Oh, just because I've experienced more of it and, like, it is not without its flaws. And I experienced it is not without its flaws. Versus not having previously done so.
Oh, okay. Just the weird random issues with the launch, I assume.
No. I'm going to duck around spoilers, but there's at least one character that I think is badly written and, like, well below their usual caliber and well below the caliber of basically every other character.
Yes, I will wholeheartedly agree with this. It has not detracted too much from my enjoyment of the game, but man,
yeah,
I do not like what happened with that particular character, and they should have done much better.
Yes, Grace has put it better than I was about to. Like, I am super positive on, and I need to be clear, like, I'm super positive on this expansion, and even some writing that I really just did not like at all was not enough to sour the experience beyond being a little grumbly about it. But it is something that I ran into this week and I was like, didn't really like that so much. And in the meantime, I've also met a whole bunch of other characters that I think are fantastically written and I'm really interested in.
Also, you're a max level Red Mage.
Also, I'm a max level Red Mage. I think I might be the first person in this group to hit 70.
Yes.
They're not the first in our guild by any stretch of the imagination.
And Grace and I hit 69 earlier, but I am way behind her in story.
Yeah, I have reached the fifth dungeon and have not run it yet, but I have unlocked it.
Nice.
And I literally just ran the second trial before we did the podcast, and now I have all the story to catch up between that and the next dungeon.
And I think, like, one of the things that's been very great has been both in our free company and in the link shell that I'm in, like, people for the most part are kind of being vague about even what the dungeons are so that people can avoid spoilers. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we generally refer to them as Dungeon 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and Trial 1, 2, and I don't know if there's a third trial, but I haven't heard anyone talk about it.
Well, admittedly, like, part of the problem is this time around, the dungeon names themselves are super spoilery.
Yeah. I mean, of the dungeons, I feel like only two of the six from 60 to 70 are not spoiler name. Like, the names themselves, they're like, oh, I know what I'm doing there.
That's a shame.
Yeah, which, like, it makes it hard if you're trying to be circumspect, although
I don't know if I agree with that for the first three anyway.
I guess, I waffled on the first one. The second two and three are the ones where I'm like, honestly, I can tell you I can tell you even like what kind of enemies you fight in them, and it's not going to be like a spoiler in any meaningful way.
Number four, though, the name of the dungeon is a spoiler. Yeah.
Yes. Number four, the name of the dungeon is a spoiler.
Pretty much is too.
Five is, but not a surprising one.
Right.
Like, you knew that was going to happen at some point. And the same is true of number six, but.
And also, so far, I have loved all of the dungeons.
Yes, me too.
So I want to branch out into a discussion about this because I feel like, so one of the things that Final Fantasy XIV does really well is attempting to groom players for what kind of content they want to give them. And I think a lot of the forced grouping is to basically get you in a mindset of grouping up to do stuff. And we had this conversation the other day as to, I think, the Final Fantasy XIV populace is in general better prepared for doing mechanics because they have to kind of interact with mechanics on the way up. But I feel like this expansion more than any is them really wanting to improve the quality of players in, at a minimum, like the 24 player content. Because all of the dungeons are very, these are raid mechanics. These are mechanics you're going to see in other situations because we've seen them in lots of different forms in the other, you know, light raids and primary raid content.
I'm just thinking of that one boss that is mechanics check the boss.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was incredibly fun.
And I still have yet to make it through it unscathed. I at least always take like one ding. But all the dungeons have been super fun, like even from the very beginning one.
I actually, okay, so I didn't really feel the very beginning one.
I love that one.
I like
one.
The beginning one because it's the, like, it's straight out of FF5.
Yeah,
it's straight out of FF5.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
And it's got Carl Boss.
Right, like, even if it wasn't, it's just, like, atmospherically, I love it to death.
I much prefer the atmosphere of the second dungeon.
I feel like I didn't like the second dungeon quite as much.
I would like to live in the second dungeon, but I like the atmosphere of the first dungeon better.
Like, the first dungeon feels like you're going through a sequence of events more than exploring a place. And I kind of like that about it.
Okay,
like,
I like that it's
yeah.
I like that it's this destination, and you're like going through the process of all these things happening around you.
Yeah, I like this sort of narrative event string. Like, I don't want it to be every dungeon, but I do like that. Like, hey, this is a string of events. It's like this is a story that's unfolding that you're a part of.
Yeah, I think that's what was bothering me about it is that that's different, and I wasn't like. I was kind of weirded out by it.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And the second one is very much you're exploring this space. I like the blend. I feel like sometimes I go into, and I see this with the hard modes of dungeons, where they, if you're not familiar, the FF14 dungeons will do hard modes, but it's all new bosses, oftentimes new enemies. It's the same, like, structure of the level, but you progress through it in a different way and sometimes different paths, so it feels very different even if it's the same space.
I mean, often it's not even quite exactly the same space.
Yeah, you know, you might you know, beat a boss in a dungeon, and during the boss there's this crazy earthquake and parts of the dungeon fall in while you're fighting the final boss, and then when you go back into it for the hard mode, it's kind of beaten up and broken because of the earthquake the last time around.
And my personal favorite take on that is probably either Holebreaker Isle, where they repurposed that island as a training ground, or what is it, Burrow Sirius, where the normal is you enter the basement of a lighthouse way up to the top, and the last boss is at the top, and in the hard mode you get airdropped into the top and have to go through it in basically reverse order.
Yeah,
except it got a little beaten up the first time you were there, so some parts are missing.
Yep, but I do have some of those where it's like Lost City of Amdapur is the one that comes to mind, where the normal and the hard mode are like kind of indistinguishable because I don't really have a good sense of the story that's happening in either one. And like Gubal Library is similar, where it's like I honestly had forgotten normal Gubal Library until we did it the other day, and I was like, oh, all these seem like the same boss. No, wait, no, they're not. Hold on. So I like having that blend of exploration and narrative style dungeons. I think the caliber of their solo story instances has gone up dramatically.
They're super interesting this time, especially one I'm thinking about in the steps area.
Yeah.
That one is amazing and does a bunch of things that I don't think they've ever done in a story instance.
Yeah. There's a bunch that are doing just really, really clever, really interesting things.
Yeah. I loved the steps. I loved how it's like there was a game and it was different. It wasn't just beat all of the dudes.
Yeah, you have objectives that aren't beat up all the dudes. And like beating up dudes is a thing you do in services objectives, but
I kind of hope they translate that into their dungeon design as well. Like figure out dungeons that have objectives other than beat up all the dudes.
I feel like that's harder to do because you've got to get more than one player on board.
I mean, admittedly, we already talked about mechanics the fight in the dungeon, and that is very much not your standard dungeon fight.
It was incredible.
It's a boss encounter in which you do not beat up the boss in any way.
Yeah, you get perma-pacified at the start of it. I feel like that was an experiment, and I think that they're going to eyeball it to see how well it worked. That reeks to me of we want to try this, but we don't know how it's going to go over. Let's see how it goes over.
But they did put it in a story dungeon and not an optional dungeon.
They did. Well, because they want data.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's a resounding success. I love that.
Yeah, that fight is really fun because it's so different. Like, I wouldn't want every fight to be that way, but...
No, but I didn't mind occasional fights being that way. It's just, it's nice, and it's kind of nice that it's in a story dungeon, frankly, because it's forcing everybody to make sure that they understand a certain set of mechanics. And you will have to get good at them, and you don't have any excuse because you don't have to worry about your DPS while you're doing that fight.
Yep.
Which goes back to what I was saying. Like, I think they're training us for a whole new level of difficulty in the raid content.
Or at least trying to get everybody on the same level.
Yeah, I don't feel like they did anything terribly new.
No.
New mechanics in that fight.
Nope.
Although I will grouse a little bit that they changed one of the symbols to ask me to do something completely different.
That's not actually true.
I feel like they're using a consistent symbol. You had just internalized a particular habit that had served you up until that point.
I mean, you don't want to take that symbol and stand near a bunch of people usually, which is absolutely what you want to do in that fight.
Well, it's the symbol that means a mechanic is going to happen to you.
Usually.
And usually it's an AoE that's about to land on you. In this particular case, it's a single target mechanic.
Yes.
And then you get the normal group up mechanic shortly after that.
Yeah, but importantly, it is a single target mechanic that has a bolt-on effect on the rest of the group.
And if you take it off into a corner, it's going to screw the rest of the group over.
Yep.
They can adjust.
How are your guys' class quests?
They're kind of boring.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was just Dragoon.
I mean, mine has had some entertaining moments, but it's not that interesting. Also, I think I encountered a bug with mine. Like, I had a class story instance, and I could not figure out for the life of me why I kept failing at it. And it turns out, like, I went and looked some stuff up, and they're like, oh, just run away from the guy who's supposed to be tanking things so that the AoEs don't drop on him. Well, that's what I had been doing, and he kept running around after me and following me. So it turned out I had to leave the game and come back in the next day, and then he actually tanked the thing far away from me, and it was no problem to finish the fight.
So I have done 3 of my quests so far. In my level 60 quest, I went and talked to a person, and then that was the end of that quest. In the 63 quest, I went and talked to a person, they sent me off to another place where I talked to a person, and that was the end of that quest. And then in the 65 quest, I went and talked to a person, and then I went and talked to a person, and then I went to a different zone and talked to a person, killed one mob, and that was the end of that quest.
Okay, that's
Dark Knight
sad.
Has a quest instance in 65 that is actually really interesting, but the story itself is not as... Dark Knight's kind of rough, because Dark Knight has the best 30 to 50 in the game.
Yeah, it's true.
Mine had a story quest, a story instance at 65, I guess. And yeah, the instance was really cool because it was like, you're going to solo this dungeon that you've run a million times. But the story was kind of eh.
Yeah, I got to fight one middling enemy.
Oh.
So the warrior's just really weird right now because it's more like a Hildebrand quest than anything.
Mine feels like a Hildebrand quest too.
Like, it's the tale of one character being infatuated with, like, another person, and it's just weird.
Yeah, I guess mine is also kind of like that, but it's also boring.
Mine is this one character searching out this, like, legendary dragon, and you constantly chasing these leads that lead to hilarious misunderstandings. Like, in the first one, you find out that the slumbering worm that you were searching for is actually the title given to a monk that died 300 years ago. Ha ha ha! It was a human, not a dragon.
Tee hee hee.
The Dark Knight one is kind of tragic, although it starts with somebody stealing half of your soul stone.
I mean, I get it. It's, what do you do with Dragoon now that the Dragoon's stated purpose is kind of fulfilled?
And you just got out of an entire expansion that was all about dragooning?
Yeah, kind of, except our class story quest was not really tied to the main story at all. It was kind of weird. That was an entire expansion about Astinian, the worst dragoon.
Well, and to be fair, like, the Heavensward class story for Warrior was kind of non-important as well.
I liked that one, though.
It was okay. It was just like, it didn't really matter.
It was not as good as 30 to 50.
No. None of, I don't think any of them have been
Monk
as
was.
Good as
Monk
30
was
to
much
50.
Better than 30 to 50.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay.
I've not also played that one.
I just have to say, from my perspective, if I were a Dragoon right now, I would be at least somewhat curious about the fact that there might be a new Dragon Primal that might still be on the loose. That seems like something dragoons would be interested in.
Well, it's not a real dragon. It just looks like a dragon.
Yeah, dragoons still think Bahamut's a pretty real dragon.
They should get with the times.
I'm surprised that dragoons and summoners get along at all.
Heathens.
It's interesting because Red Mage... Like, Red Mage is starting from zero, from nothing, at level 50. So it basically has two story arcs, one from 50 to 60, and one from 60 to 70. And
are they linked in any way? Because yeah. I know for the old classes, like, for the classes added in Heavensward, they basically had two arcs that were somewhat linked.
Yes. These are, like, one of them is a complete arc, and the other one is sort of a sequel to that arc, but it's a direct sequel.
Right.
And, like, they're interesting, but they're not super inspired, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't have any particular complaints about them. And I kind of like the two characters that... There's, like, two main characters that you meet who are Red Mages, and I think they're both cool. And there's a bunch of, like, call-outs to other classes in the Red Mage quest line and, like, other story beats, which is kind of neat, but... I don't know, I wasn't, like, ultra super wowed by it.
That said, the main story quest is just absolutely amazing and some of the best storytelling in a while. And they're doing a very different thing with this expansion. Like, I know Tam and I talked about this a bit offline, but the previous couple of expansions have very much been driven by the villains. And the villains in this one are kind of mediocre, especially compared to the villains from the previous one. But that's okay because all of the story is being driven by your allies. And that's really interesting to see in effect. And you get a lot of awesome moments with all of these characters that you have grown to be very close with.
Well, and for me at least, it feels more Final Fantasy-ish than some of the previous content because, or at least for me, some of my favorite Final Fantasy moments are when you're the resistance, you're the underdogs fighting against the evil empire, and we're we're finally getting to fight against the evil empire, because we sort of did in the first.
What, 2, 4, and 6, and 7, yeah. Sort of?
Yeah, yeah, very much. And, like, we sort of got to fight against the evil empire in A Realm Reborn, but then that thread kind of stopped. And then we went off and did other stuff, and now we're finally getting to return to fighting what I wanted to fight in the first place, was the Garleans.
Yeah, it takes a while for you to really get to fight them, though. Like, I don't know, that was kind of an interesting thing, is there's a lot of not fighting Garleans that happens in levels 60 through 65.
But at least they are a present threat throughout the whole expansion.
They are absolutely a constant present threat.
Which was definitely not the case at all in Heavensward.
Yeah.
They showed up a couple of times, but mostly they weren't around.
Yeah, they kind of get tossed into a side story, even at max level, too.
I feel like, and maybe this is a weird take, but I feel like they are not the ubiquitous, every mob you're fighting is an Imperial threat that I was expecting. But I also feel like the story does a really, really good job of addressing that.
Yes, it does.
Like, one of the things that I think is super great about the storytelling in Final Fantasy is it manages to have relevant problems without ever downplaying the fact that basically once you finished the main story, and even not terribly far into the main story of A Realm Reborn, you're really powerful. Like, as an individual, you are a shockingly powerful person. And by the time you get to Stormblood, you are probably the most powerful, arguably, if not definitely, the most powerful single person in Eorzea. And most of the people you deal with who know you at all are aware of this and are just accepted. Like, that's just, yes, you are that ridiculously powerful. And so a lot of the problems that you deal with aren't problems that can necessarily be solved by punching them in the face really hard. And it becomes this, like, okay, what are we going to do to solve, you know, what are we going to do to solve the problem of refugees in this major city? Well, I mean, you can't punch that in the face really hard.
I mean, that's sort of what we're doing now. Locating an appropriate person to punch in the face really hard to fix that problem.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the important thing with this expansion is, like, over the last two expansions, we have been this god walking among men in Eorzea. And that's fine and dandy, but, like, when everyone knows who you are, it kind of tarnishes the feel of some of these things. Whereas now we're in a group that doesn't know who the hell you are. Like, these people have been isolated from a constant drip of news from, you know, the rest of Eorzea, and you're just this person, and they don't trust you, they don't know what your motives are. And you have to, like, go through all of the stuff that we did at the beginning of the game to earn trust, to, like, work our way and prove that, no, really, I can handle this, it's okay. And I think that's the aspect that's been so interesting for me this expansion, is that I love games that are army building games, where basically you, like, go off and recruit alliances or recruit companions, and that you build towards a goal in the future where, like, you and your alliance are going to take on the bad bads at some point. And at least up until this point, it feels like that's what we're doing. We're, like, we're helping all of these people, which, unfortunately, for, you know, the side effect of, you know, them helping us eventually down the line.
I did have a moment where I was comparing the villains of this game to the Garlean villains in A Realm Reborn, and I kind of miss Nero Tulskeva, Lucia, and Gaius Van Belsar, because, I don't know, I don't find any of the major antagonists as compelling as any of those characters.
Yeah, but I think, sort of going off of what we were originally talking about, I feel like this expansion is not so much about, it isn't about the enemies, it's about your friends. And I think it's really interesting to see an MMO where the story is about, the story that they're telling is about your, you and your interactions with your allies more than the enemies that you fight, without feeling like you're the adjunct to some other character's, like, interesting story. You know, a lot of times I've seen that, and WoW is a really good example of a game that I don't think does this very well, where they'll really want to tell the story of their, you know, interesting character that they include. And so you're kind of like second fiddle to this character that they want to show off how awesome they are.
Well, so, yeah, like I was going to say, a prime example is when you finally get into this duel with Garrosh, and instead of you getting to be the one that takes down Garrosh, it cutscenes out, and now it's Thrall and Garrosh fighting.
Yeah. If you, you know, if you go into a dungeon, or if you go into a story instance or whatever, and Thrall is in there with you, you know that you are going to be basically a chump next to him. You know, he'll be like, oh, thanks for all your help while I did this cool stuff. But he's going to be the one doing the cool stuff, not you.
Unless you're a shaman.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like in Final Fantasy, it's weirdly the opposite. Like, they show you these people that by rights should be more important than you, but are still, you're this crucial piece of things.
Some of these characters are still badass in their own rights, but there are some things you can do that they cannot.
Yes. Yeah, and they have a very, in some cases, a very simple thing that's been very consistent through the whole story that you can do that they cannot. And so even if they are every bit as powerful as you are, which is rare, but happens sometimes, you still have this, you are particularly special for a specific reason that isn't necessarily just plot armor.
And I mean, it's also plot armor.
It is also plot armor, but it's consistently plot armor. It's like, it's the plot armor you've had since the start of the game.
Yeah.
And it makes you particularly good. Like, it's not really a spoiler to comment that the thing that you can do that no one else can is primals just passively, like as part of their nature, can overwhelm people's will and turn them into mindless thralls. Like, they get followers by taking over people's minds.
Tempering.
Tempering. And you are immune to it.
There are theories to why this might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear why exactly you're immune to it, but the end result is you're immune to it, and because of that, you can fight primals. You can go toe-to-toe with a primal, and most other people can't. I also think it's neat that there are... you have some other... There's this, like, power to see into people's pasts that's kind of the thing that makes you a scion that people think of when they think of, or at least like all of the scions and their associated group, like that's what they can do.
I think it's actually
the echo.
But there are other people with that power.
Yes.
And so it's not just you. And so you get to see, like, how does that affect other people?
Side note, I think that's introduced somebody with that power in this expansion, too.
Yeah. And they've had a few of them. I mean, they had somebody who had the power, and it manifested at the wrong time, and they died. Was it A Realm Reborn? I don't remember exactly when it was.
I don't remember that.
It was, like, mentioned as a side character.
Oh, okay.
It was like, I don't even know that you ever got to meet that character. It was just mentioned, like, as part of, hey, we're trying to recruit, but we found out this happened, and it's really bad. But I guess sort of where I was going with all of that is, it's really cool to have a game that respects all of the stuff that you've done and doesn't pretend like it's resetting from zero every time. And the NPCs treat you the way somebody of your accomplishments, like, should be treated.
Okay, and that's like the coolest thing ever was that moment we were talking about in how that quest changes based in our deeds.
I feel like there's, like, some discussions we're not going to be able to have for a little while.
Yeah, there's like so many spoilers. Yeah, so there's a there's a moment, and I don't want to go into detail about it, but there's a moment where if you have done something in your past, the game acknowledges it. And when those moments happen, it's the coolest thing. Like the prime one that I can remember, the first one that just, you know, freaked me out was like, if you meet another of your class somewhere in the world, chances are they're going to acknowledge the fact that you are singled out among your class.
Yeah. As part of, you know, as part of the Red Mage quest, you go and talk with Black Mages, and the Black Mages are like, oh, hey, it's good to see you again. Or at least it was for me, because I'm a high level Black Mage. And they're like, oh, man, this guy said he was going to bring, he was bringing his entourage, but we didn't know it was you. Well, let me help. I'm happy to help. And the other guy's like, wait, you know these people? That's really helpful.
Well, and there's the whole thing, you know, throughout the entirety of Heavensward, there's all this stuff, you're interacting with Astinian, who is the Azure Dragoon. Except you're also the Azure Dragoon, which does actually get, you know, like very often when it comes up, he's like, okay, well, both of us.
Except Astinian is like the worst dragoon, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well. I enjoyed the moment where there's like giant battle that happens and there's tons of wounded. And instead of like you wandering off, the NPCs are like, hey, aren't you a healer? Come over here to heal, damn it. Like, don't just stand there.
Yeah. I got, when that happened, I got, look, I know you're not, I know it's not your thing. Like, I know it's not your specialty, but we need every healer we can get. And we know you can do some healing.
But the thing is moments like that feel so rich.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, most other games don't do. I mean, I've talked about this before, and so in Wrath of the Lich King, you end up doing so much for, what's the red dragonflight lady that I'm drawing a blank on?
Alexstrasza.
Alexstrasza, yes. You do so much with her in all manner of quests, and then when you show up in Twilight Highlands, she doesn't know who the hell you are. Like, she doesn't acknowledge that you've even ever met. And that was just so jarring to me.
Yeah, it was frustrating. It's like, hey, I've ridden on your back. Like, I helped you kill your brother.
You sent me on all sorts of weird little missions.
And I think that a big part of, a big reason behind that is Final Fantasy, it's a thing that people level criticisms on for Final Fantasy for doing, but you must do all of the story content. You can skip whatever side quests you want, but you have to do the main story to unlock a lot of the later stuff.
Basically everything.
And so they know what quests you've done. They are 100% aware of what quests you've done.
And this expansion, especially, there's been so many times where I help this person out and they're like, oh, I know you. You helped me do this back in, you know, Quarry Mill or back in, you know, Eastern Thanalan or like hey, all the way back to the beginning of the game.
Oh, man, it's you. Do you remember me? And I'm like, no. Sorry, bro. Like,
yeah,
I don't remember you from 2 years and 40 levels ago.
Yeah, when Mefred showed up and was like, hey, it's me. Do you remember me? I was like,
nope.
Who?
No.
You know that a named NPC, that it's been a while since you've seen a named NPC when Kodra does not remember them by name.
No.
I did notice that in some of the class storylines. Like, Gladiator, the Paladin level 60 quest brings back the NPCs from the Gladiator quest, which has been forever ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the Warrior quest brings back every character that you've ever interacted with, really. I mean, it brings in the Marauder class lead. I also love it when people recognize you by your grand company.
It's probably another reason why I like Hopebreaker Heart so much.
Yes.
It'd be interesting, though, if they recognized the fact that you switched allegiance.
I'm at least a second lieutenant in all the grand companies, so...
Yeah, no, I haven't done Vipers yet, but I just can't do the yellow. I just can't.
Never wore any of the yellow, so...
Why would you not be red?
But black is also a perfectly valid color.
Strongly agree.
I mean, I feel like I can't really make this decision yet, but this is definitely going to rank up there high on the MMO expansion scale. Like, already, story-wise, I am super sold.
I appreciate... I've gone 60 to 70. I appreciate that there is plenty of stuff for me to do to get those levels. And I did not, at any point, spend time in Moogle Hell.
Well, it feels like they have increased the number of side quests.
Yes.
Pretty sure they have. But that also means you don't have to do a particular set you don't like. Although, personally, I have done basically none of them.
I mean, I did the first zone's worth of side quests. Well, actually, the first two halves of two different zones. Only because I couldn't make any progress otherwise.
Yeah.
But after that, I have greatly tapered off the amount of side questing that I've done. Mostly only in a situation where I've gotten stuck and am just shy of the next, you know, required level.
I've not gotten stuck. It looks like I am roughly a level ahead of my requirement at all times. So I suspect if I keep doing dungeons like I have, I'm not going to hit, not going to get stuck.
Yeah, I mean, the dungeons seem to give so much XP. I've basically gotten stuck a couple times, and one or two dungeons has put me over easily.
Which is really refreshing, especially considering how much, like, World of Warcraft has nerfed their dungeon experience for running dungeons.
Like, even Heavensward, like, I ran Vault an awful lot to try to catch up. It definitely took more than one or two runs.
Yeah, like, I've done a number of dungeon runs, but I have almost never queued for a dungeon because DPS queues are ridiculous. Which I have to say is my biggest complaint of this expansion is if there aren't people in the free company on, which luckily there have been most of the time, but if there aren't and I want to run a dungeon, it's utter misery. And it was utterly predictable, utter misery.
I mean, we live in a weird alternate reality where we kind of have nothing but tanks and healers, but the rest of the world is hurting for tanks and healers.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's wrong with our free company that we have mostly healers and tanks.
I think part of it is that, like, a lot of these people played DPS in other expansions and were confronted with the horribleness that the DPS queue is.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided, I'm going to be a healer, or I'm going to be a tank, so that I can get instant queues. And oh wait, we have nothing but healers and tanks.
I don't know, I'm repeating an earlier mistake, and my two highest level characters are tanks.
Was that simply just because you couldn't decide which tank you wanted to be this expansion?
Yep.
I mean,
have you decided which tank you want to be this expansion?
Now, Dark Knight is 5 levels higher, so it's going to be the one I'm sticking with first, at least.
Fair enough.
I'm also leveling 2 healers. Sometimes you just like what you like.
That's true. I leveled a DPS first, and my next thing is going to be to work on a healer, but I kind of don't want to play the healer that I've been playing, so that's a thing.
Do you know it's probably really easy to get? A tank to run anything with.
What, to level a healer?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard. I mean, also Palace of the Dead is a thing to at least get me to 60, but I don't super want to burn my way through Palace of the Dead again because I did a lot of that on Red Mage.
I mean, that's what I did to get my Astrologian off.
It's what I'm about to do on my Astrologian, which, P.S., Astrologian is probably the next healer that I level because I don't want to play White Mage.
Not Scholar?
No.
Scholar's kind of butts this expansion.
Yeah, Scholar and Summoner are both kind of butts this expansion. And also, like,
I don't think Summoner is butts, but
I don't think Summoner is. I don't think Summoner is butts. It just doesn't feel as good as it used to.
I mean, yeah, Scholar is the same. Like, Scholar is functional, but it does not feel great. And compared to my Astrologian, yeah, it's just not as fun.
Yeah,
I am surprised and amazed that Astrologian did not get nerfs coming into this expansion. Quite frankly.
It's part of the reason why I decided to level the Scholar first, in addition to being a dirty cheater and getting the Summoner for free.
I'm boring. I'm still a warrior.
I'm also forever a Dragoon.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing for me is I was playing Summoner because as a Summoner, I can cheat. And having a class where I could go from where I could have both a DPS and a healer up simultaneously is super great for leveling and also means I don't have to do a lot of work. But Summoner was fun because I had a whole ton of utility that I could use to just do things that other DPS can't.
Except now Red Mage can also do a lot of those things.
Red Mage can do literally all of those things. And
except tank.
I can solo impossible things on a Red Mage better than I could on a Summoner. Like, I can solo boss fates on my Red Mage. I could not really do that as well as I'd hoped on a Summoner, especially in Heaven's Word.
It'll be interesting to see what the first class changes are and whether or not they arrive with the coming of the raid.
Yeah.
Or whether they wait a bit to see what happens.
I'm currently trying to save up as much money as possible because I really want a house in... see if we can move our free company house to Shiragane, because those are beautiful and we get to keep our beachfront property. If we're lucky.
If we get the... Yeah.
I'm looking forward to people actually getting used to the classes so that we can get some viable information about how they're performing. Because right now it seems like most of the information floating around is either hype or salt and not much middle ground between.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like if you believe Reddit right now, there's only one viable tank and that is Paladin and everyone else is horrible.
Which is funny because I've seen a lot of people running Warrior numbers today and saying that Warriors are actually in a pretty good place. It just took a while.
Yeah, and like people were super down on Summoner early on, but like numerically Summoner is fine. It sucks in AoE, but
everyone's AoE got nerfed this expansion though. Except Black Mages.
And Red Mages.
But it's not optimal. And if you're not optimal, then why even bother? Har har har.
People are really happy about Bard though.
People are really happy about Bard.
Less happy about Machinist.
You know though, I've run several dungeons with Neff, and she seems happy as a clam, so, you know, so be it.
That's what matters. Are you enjoying yourself?
I like that the burst windows are more frequent and less high as a tank. I'm okay with this because it's easier to deal with.
I mean, there's definitely a thing. I think there's going to be a lot of learning to play that needs to happen for Red Mages.
That's going to be true for a lot of classes. Like, Samurai is complicated.
Yeah. But I feel like when
Red Mage is less complicated,
Red Mage is less complicated. Samurai requires much more attention. Red Mage requires much more discipline. I mean, Red Mages now have the problem that Black Mages did in 2.0,
yes.
Which is if you want to take aggro from the tank on the pole, you can do this. It isn't like, will I or won't I? If I want to do it, I'm going to do it. And you have to be aware of that and not do it.
Details.
Look, I feel like this is going to be the expansion of me letting a lot of pug Red Mages die.
Some of them will learn. Some of them won't, though.
But yeah, I feel like Red Mage so far is the highest on-opening threat that I've seen of any class in any MMO I've played.
It's definitely a thing.
What I find is interesting, this expansion, is they gave us two new classes, and they're both classes that I want to play. Like, Red Mage is probably the only caster I've ever really been that interested in playing, because it has a sword.
You do know it still mostly casts spells, right?
I don't care, it's got a sword.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that I've wanted Red Mage from the very start of this game, and like, sorry Summoner, I was never coming back to you.
But I also, like, really enjoy Samurai, and it's going to be my first DPS that I level.
I wish Samurai were a tank. I understand that it's not, and I understand to some extent why it's not, but I wish it were. Because I also want to play it, but I have no need for another DPS.
I'm just bitter about Blue Mage.
And I also feel like this expansion could have used a tank real bad.
But I'm not sure it would have really benefited by another tank in armor and sword.
I agree with that. I do think another tank with armor and sword would not have been a good thing. Would not have been something that it needed. But Samurai isn't a tank in armor and sword.
Nope, it's not.
But I can hold up hope that they make Blue Mage a tank.
Look, if they do, that's going to be me doing the thing you just did this expansion, and all my other tanks are going to go away.
I mean, I'll play a Blue Mage tank too. It'll be great. I mean, I won't play it as a main because I keep on playing Red Mage. But
I wonder if Red Mage is honestly a test to see if Blue Mage could work. And what I mean by that is, like, Red Mage is this DPS with insane utility. And traditionally, Blue Mage is an insane utility class. Yeah, they usually have an answer to everything.
I feel like they captured the essence of Red Mage fantastically without making it a confused class. Like, its role is very clear, and what you do with it is very clear, but it absolutely feels like a Red Mage.
You cast white magic spells, you cast black magic spells, you hit things with a sword, and all of these things are not actually in conflict with each other like they frequently are in other Final Fantasy games.
Yeah.
Like, FF5.
Yeah, they've given me the Spellblade style class that I love to play, and it works. And it's not like, it's not awkward. It's not, I'm not a buff bot. I feel cool. It hits every note of my player fantasy.
And I love the fact that you got custom versions of all the spells instead of just the same spell that Black Mage or White Mage casts.
Yeah, like, I feel like that was required. Like, they had to do that to make the class make any sense. But they did it in such a way that it feels right. And I think they could do it with Blue Mage. I'm hoping that Red Mage signals a move towards more creative class design.
I want to see Puppeteer.
Be an interesting class to bring back.
Yeah.
To be a tech too.
Like, I would either do, like, I would be fine with either Puppeteer or Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Beastmaster's another one where if it went in as a tank, that would probably be my new class.
Yeah, I think you could have Beastmaster very reasonably as a tank. I think you could have Chemist very reasonably as a healer. I think you could have Dancer very reasonably as basically any role.
Pick one.
Yeah, like, pick one. You can make a Dancer make sense in any role. I honestly think you could make Blue Mage make sense in virtually any role, but I'm hoping they make it a tank.
I mean, I feel like Time Mage could also make sense as a tank.
Yeah. I feel like Time Mage's lunch was already eaten, unfortunately.
I agree. Like, there's a reason that I'm leveling. There's a reason that I'm leveling Astrologian, and Astrologian's going to be my next healer because it's the closest thing I'm ever going to get to a Time Mage. But yeah, there's a whole lot in the Final Fantasy Tactics and just Final Fantasy games in general that, as long as they're willing to do creative class design, work really well. And if Red Mage is their test case for that, then I think it is a successful one.
I tell you the thing that I'm really interested in this expansion cycle is to see if they still have the dead spot.
The dead spot?
Yeah, yeah, like
that between tiers off the place.
Well, I'm not even talking about the gearing problem. I'm talking about the, we just launched the expansion. Now it's going to be several months before we put anything else in. Because there was a huge lag between 2.0 and 2.1. There was a huge lag between 3.0 and 3. Whatever the first patch was. I mean, I feel like they need to speed up that little interval. Because once they've got their patches going, they do a great job of rolling out major, minor, major, minor, major, minor. I'm also looking forward to the fact that we're going to start getting dungeons and minors.
Well, that's not what they said.
A single dungeon.
That's unfortunately not what they said. We're not going to get dungeons and minor patches.
Was that just translated weird?
No, we're unfortunately only going to get single dungeons in the catch-up patches. But they're not going to keep Expert Roulette at just the one dungeon. They're going to keep the last three in there.
I'm hoping that means that they can have a faster cadence if there's less content per patch.
I hope so, but okay. We'll see.
I am now unhappy. Because I thought we were going to get two in a major, one in a minor, two in a major, one in a minor. Uh-huh. Because the biggest problem was the fact that two dungeons is a horrible thing for an Expert Roulette. So maybe having three dungeons
about half the time, it's still going to be two dungeons. And when it's three dungeons, it's going to be those two dungeons and another one. So that's
disappointing.
Kind of unfortunate. But I also, like, during most of Heaven's War, didn't really feel the need to run Expert Roulette a whole bunch, except at the very start.
Yeah, I agree.
But that didn't bother me quite as much.
I didn't feel like I had to grind it the way I felt like I had to grind it in Realm Reborn.
We also weren't nearly as dedicated during the whole of the Heavensward cycle as we were during A Realm Reborn. I am way more invested right now in Stormblood than I was in Heaven's Word.
Hey, it's not full of a bunch of elves who are all assholes. It's like two things in its favor.
Yeah, like there were great moments in Heaven's Word, but the overall story arc, like somebody said this the other day, maybe it was Ash, that they just got tired of all the pipe organ music.
That wasn't
yes,
me.
That was me. It was great. Like, I thought that the pipe organ music was super on point for Heaven's Word and was the right, like, thematic thing. And now I've listened to pipe organ music for years and I'm tired of it.
I mean, I really liked it when they added pipe organ to the battle theme as soon as you get to Gurthus and the Realm Reborn storyline.
Yeah. And that was the only battle theme I heard throughout Heaven's Word.
There's a new one, but it still has lots of pipe organ in it.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like there's much more varied music in Stormblood.
Yes. Because not everything is either the Heaven's Word theme or Dragon Song.
Yes. Like, I feel there's...
I like variations on a theme, but that was maybe a bit much.
Yeah. I also feel like they have distinct musical styles for... I feel like they have distinct musical styles for both...
sides. Sort of.
Yeah, for both Doma and Alamigo. Spoilers, Stormblood takes place in Doma and Alamigo, if you did not know that already and didn't look at the box art.
Spoilers.
Not really spoilers. But yeah, so as a result, it's like much more varied music, more varied kind of locations, but I also felt like Heaven's Word was more varied than I was expecting.
AKA not entirely snow.
Yeah, it's just mostly snow.
I mean, I would still prefer snow to desert, but there's enough other things than desert, which is good.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the point. I feel like this is the point where we need to talk about how good their implementation of underseas areas is compared to a lot of MMOs.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know what you don't have to do underwater?
They made a great decision here, and that's they decided you never have to fight underwater.
Yeah,
like, or at least, you know, while using water controls.
Underwater combat sucks. Even people who do, even in games where they do underwater combat well, it's real touchy. Let's not do water combat.
But at the same time, they also made the decision not to screw with a breath meter.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind underwater combat, but I do mind underwater combat when I also have to worry about, am I going to run out of air? Like, the downside of it is that, like, there are some cool places underwater, but most of them are in bubbles. And so there's not as much just, like, exploring really awesome things while you are swimming around. There's a little.
There's some.
But there's a lot of bubbles down there other than the main bubbles.
There are some things that I've thought have been really cool where I've gone underwater and been like, oh wow, there's a bunch of stuff down here. Well, this is cool. I wasn't expecting
this. In many ways, it reminds me of the way water combat felt in Guild Wars 2. I mean, water exploration felt in Guild Wars 2. Where there's just stuff underneath there that you may not even know is there unless you decide to dive down. And I also really like the fact that they went back and made a lot of areas of the old world swimmable.
Really, just one area, unfortunately. I wish they had done it to Outer Lanosia, but they didn't. Or Upper Lanosia. You can't swim across Bronze Lake.
That's unfortunate.
I sort of understand why, because Bronze Lake is an important dividing line in that zone. But it's still kind of unfortunate.
But hey, you can chill in Costa del Sol. Have we tried the housing area?
I haven't tried, but I suspect you can't swim in the mist. You can't swim in the one in Kugane. I know that. You can't get in the water.
Yeah, I didn't even realize you could swim in the old world areas. I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah, I also hadn't noticed. I hadn't really spent any time in the old world areas.
So another thing that I know Grace and I were talking about earlier, I really appreciate how much gear they're throwing at us.
Yeah, it's pretty great, this expansion. I mean, every time you do a dungeon, you are guaranteed a piece of gear on top of what drops. And there are a lot more, more stuff drops from each boss chest. And there are a lot more or more consistently rewarding random side chests.
It's more consistently rewarding. It's actually the same number of chests. I've been doing the Heavensward dungeons a lot recently for reasons. But it's really nice. It's also nice that a lot of the gear rewards, not in dungeons, they stuck on the main quests. Like complete armor sets as part of the main quest.
Yeah.
Those existed in Heavensward, but they were mostly on side quests.
Well, and I have to say, I really love the fact that we have the system of showing what quests actually unlock stuff, which wasn't something that was in place for Heavensward.
No.
And they've also decided to put the Aether Current on the first step of one of those quests instead of like buried five quests down in the middle of the stack.
That was a change they made during Heavensward, but long after we did it.
Both of the primals I've seen so far, I'm really looking forward to doing in Extreme.
Yeah.
As usual, they put them in the opposite order for Extreme modes in terms of difficulty.
That makes sense, because the second primal honestly feels like it's going to be the easier. It's not ridiculously complicated once you know what's going to happen.
Well, and like we were talking about this earlier, like we ran it right before the podcast and the group as a whole screwed up constantly, and I don't think we were ever really in a state where it was a concern that we wouldn't finish it. Whereas I've actually failed several times already at doing the first primal. I mean, not in total, but like we've had failed attempts at doing the first primal and had to regroup and try again.
I think I failed more at doing Leviathan in the past week than any of the new stuff.
Listen, Leviathan's hard now.
Just like a frit is hard now?
It's basically the same principle there, but yes. Unexpected DPS is causing things to not happen in the order that they should.
Once we get 70 and geared, I kind of want to see what nonsense Ravana Extreme is going to be.
Pretty sure it's going to be we beat him up a whole bunch and nothing happens.
Yeah, that one.
Because that was the actual strategy people were using at 60 once they got geared.
I've been listening to the soundtracks lately at work, and I have a whole new appreciation for the Ravana theme.
Pretty great. That's both really parts.
I feel like maybe our Heavensward discussion is starting to wind down.
There's only so much we can talk about until we're allowed to talk about spoilers.
Yeah, and honestly, like as far as a spoiler show go, that's probably going to be what our eventual Game of the Month show is going to be.
I mean, since it is our July Game of the Month.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
So, another game released this week, in fact. Actually, yesterday, in fact.
Well, this coming Tuesday, in fact.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. Like, I mean, come on. Like, when something is open and lets people in, it's released. I don't care what you call the date. If there's not going to be a reset and you are allowing people to play your game, you've released.
Well, and they're letting everybody in who played the original version of the game. So, in theory, that's probably everybody who's really interested at the moment.
Yeah. So Secret World Legends is the game we are talking about.
I just got into I just downloaded it and like tried to boot it up today. Made a character and so on. Was deeply surprised that I got Tam. I normally have to have the full Tamriello, but Tam.
Yeah, I actually got just Thalen and I was shocked.
I got Ash, awesome, but I was less shocked because I reserved that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reserved Belghast as well. I'm super happy that they decided to honor lifetime members in that we have
in this game is as good as this is the lifetime got as what lifetime got us in the last game though.
No, but like I got to carry all of that stuff forward with me, and every outfit that I had purchased off of the in-game store with the stipend that I was getting monthly transferred as well.
I was disappointed. Like, pretty much the only special clothes that I had were from the Big Shiny Golem events, and those apparently don't transfer.
I was upset that the outfit I wore most often also did not transfer. The Executioner set for completing a deck, as it were, in the original game, did not transfer. And there does not seem to be anything comparable for me to earn it in this game. So, I am not happy about that particular decision.
Is that one of the secondary decks?
Yeah, it was one of the more difficult to earn decks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because all the primary ones transferred.
Yeah, those didn't go in until after, basically right before we stopped playing. Those decks did not exist when we started.
I should download and install that so that I can try and reserve a character.
Yeah, and I did double check. It is August 31st. You have until then to claim your stuff from the previous game.
Also, even if you, you know, don't have any stuff you want to claim, make sure you still hit the claim button because it will unlock all weapons for you.
Yeah, otherwise this has a cost. Pay for them.
I've not played a ton of this. I was in the closed beta that they had prior to the release of the game on Friday. I'm going to continue to say release. And I feel like what they did makes the game feel a little bit more straightforward. They've converted a lot of the tons of side missions that you could do into just things that happen when you get into an area.
Yeah, like mostly stuff that's kill X number of critters that run around in this area so far is what I've seen.
Yeah, and like all the ones that launch more investigation-y type things are still there and you can still do those. And the path in which it takes you through the zones seems to take you right past those things. Like the Wendigo one is still there and it just happened to coincide with like I needed to run that direction to go to the next major bullet point in the quest. The combat I kind of dig. I mean, I'm getting used to it. I ended up going Assassin, which is Blade and Elemental. And I actually like both of those. I kind of use it in the same way that I used to use Shotgun and Blades. Mostly as something, as a ranged attack, and then something to kill it when it gets close.
Yeah.
The class I started with a Chaos Focus as a primary, and Pistols as secondary, which was not even a reasonable combination in the original game. But I'm desperately trying to find a sword that is decent so I can go back to what I was using before. Notice Dancing Blade is still in. Dancing Blade is an elite ability because, yes, it was that good.
It always should have been.
Is it the same ability, just now it's elite?
It's not the same ability because the resource system is not the same. But it does the same thing. Still a channeled sword attack that does way more damage than it should.
Yeah, I picked the starter class that gives you an elemental primary, chaos secondary. And so far, I'm digging it.
Yeah, I took that one with the intention of changing chaos to blood basically immediately.
I don't think I've found a blood weapon yet.
I don't think I need to.
I've found so many blood weapons. It's not even funny. That's like the primary thing that I'm pouring into my sword to level.
I mean, you get more XP if you put in more other swords.
I've gotten one sword ever.
Random nature of the loot, I suspect, may become a problem, but...
Yeah, apparently it sounds like loot from the dungeons is in lockboxes.
Patron gives you some free keys, but that still seems not great.
Yeah.
Like, so far I've gotten a free key every day. Like, they have the standard free-to-play daily login reward thing, but there's two tiers. There's the normal one, and then you get the patron daily login. And so far the patron one has given me a key every day. I don't know if that's just I'm lucky, or if that's really part of what it's designed to do.
I think that's what it's designed to do.
I did notice they added, like, there was a fairly small number of special named mobs in the previous Kingsmouth, but now there's tons of them, and they all drop loot boxes.
Yeah, and they get marked on your map when you're near them.
Yeah.
They do only drop a loot box for you the first time you kill them.
Yeah, I tried the lady in the diner a second time, and it didn't drop anything.
I remember that one.
They are dependent upon them being up, though. Like, it's not like they're always up and you just have to find them. You have to wait for them to spawn.
They seem to be on pretty fast respawn, though.
Well, I mean, there's no real point in anybody killing them more than once, so hopefully that helps.
Yeah. But yeah, I would be interested to see what the dungeons are like now that they've redone all the combat and everything. Not that I have anything
to
compare with.
I'm also curious about that.
Same.
Yeah, I want to get through Kingsmouth so that I can get to Polaris and see what it's like.
Yeah, Bailey, you said you didn't really do the dungeons the first time?
I never ran a single dungeon. you guys had like already quit the game when I started playing, I think.
I wouldn't mind, like, it's one of those things where I wouldn't mind, like, running through it as a group the way we did before, because that was super fun, and we always had the right group for a dungeon and so on.
Yeah, that was awesome. And the dungeons were great.
Dungeons were great.
Until they weren't.
Until, yeah. Sad that removing silence means that the pause there is going to get cut out. But yeah, dungeons were pretty great until we hit nightmares, and suddenly they were not great at all.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because they had a tier, you know, between normal and nightmare that was reasonable and challenging and fun.
Yep.
I mean, and that's more than anything that I want to know, is, like, did they fix that? If we get through the first couple dungeons and
decide to not do those, and that'll be a much better decision than I made last time.
Right?
I did notice the dude in gold is still, in fact, right there.
Yeah, but, like, Agartha makes a hell of a lot more sense than it used to.
Yeah, it does. I think that one's kind of funny, too. Agartha went from this ridiculous maze of tree branches and portals to a sensible hub. The portals arranged, you know, around central sort of areas. So all the things with portals are in one place, for instance, or all of the Solomon Island portals.
Well, the biggest problem with the previous design was, like, there were several situations where, oh, I need to drop off the edge here at exactly this space so that I can save myself a 15-minute run.
And then you accidentally don't drop off at the right place, and then you still have a run.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, everybody seems to be mostly okay with the change. From the folks that were really serious into Secret World, there are a few that are kind of salty about it, but...
Everything is dumbed down and ruined.
See, most of the salt I've seen is people angry because... some, like, because their weapon skins didn't transfer over.
I mean, that's a good reason to be angry.
I honestly don't remember what all of the stuff I unlocked was, so I'm gonna get a whole bunch of free stuff and think, hey, cool, check out this free stuff.
I am running around in the outfit I was using before I got the Executioner's outfit, because that did come over. Also the Orochi uniform, which I am never going to wear again.
A lot of that stuff was given away on a month-to-month basis for subscribers. So there's, like, just tons of stuff that you get from being a lifetimer.
If you claimed it on your character.
Yeah, and I claimed it all on my character.
Also some fun things like the hoverboard.
Yeah, they added vehicles at one point as opposed to just running fast.
Yeah, I've seen people on motorcycles. And one with really crazy wings.
It seems weird, but...
Yeah, I need to see if those... game are weird. I need to see if those all transferred, because, like, I had a motorcycle and I had a horse.
Did not have a horse. No, I did have a horse. I had a demon horse. That did transfer.
Yeah, I haven't even found where my pets and vehicles are right now.
They had some sort of unintuitive keybind for them. You can just pull out of the menu.
Combat as a whole feels a little bit better to me, but it still has a nonsense UI.
Well, you have two different resource bars, and then whatever your weapon special is... and then potentially cooldowns for your abilities. And for whatever reason, they stuck your infinitely spammable ability but default on Q instead of on a mouse button.
Yeah.
What?
You can fix that. But the default setup was that.
That's questionable.
You are required to have exactly one basic ability equipped.
You can't have one for both weapons, yes.
You are not allowed to go without. You are not allowed to equip two.
I actually didn't check. Can your basic ability be from your secondary weapon?
I don't know. The elementalism one requires a primary. Deconstruct requires primary. Yeah, I think all the basics require the weapon to be your primary.
I have one equipped from both. So, like, I have a basic in elemental, and I've got a basic in sword.
Are you sure the second one is a basic?
Yeah.
The no cost, no cooldown version of the ability?
I'm pretty sure.
Huh. I'm looking at sword. The only one labeled basic for sword requires primary. Oh, wait. Nope. Here's another. No, that also requires primary. Yeah, as far as I can tell, everything labeled basic requires the weapon to be your primary.
Hmm. I don't know. Like, I have a AoE lightning ability in elemental that I seem to be able to spam indefinitely, and it doesn't cause me to gain heat.
That's chain lightning? Chain lightning causes you to gain heat. Like,
it doesn't cause you to gain heat out of combat.
You have to spam it a lot, to overheat.
Maybe it just gains it way slower than the other, and I've never, like, the basic ability for that, or the first one that you get, you can overheat really fast. Yeah, fireball. But I feel like it blends fine with reticle combat. In some ways it makes more sense than it did.
It is irritating. I kept forgetting that I didn't need to, like, switch targets with the tab key, and I drank all my potions.
Aww.
The biggest problem that I have right now with Secret World Legends is the fact that I also have Stormblood. Like, if I didn't have Stormblood, I'd probably be playing the hell out of Secret World Legends.
Its launch timing is really unfortunate, because were we not playing this, anyone who's playing WoW, the raid just came out last week.
Right.
And also, this coming week, if you play Diablo, the Necromancer and associated patch is also coming out.
Just a really bad launch window. And maybe they think there's not a whole lot of overlap between those, but, I mean, I feel like most of the people that I know that would be interested in Secret World are also kind of interested in other MMOs as a whole. But given the silence that's going to get edited out, I guess we are done talking about Secret World Legends.
Probably.
Anything else that we want to discuss? I guess Steam sale is going on this week.
Nah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about Steam sales right now.
Yeah. Nah. I mean,
Omnite is on sale, you can buy it.
I pretty much have all the, like, low-hanging fruit.
I picked up Flint Hook. It's pretty fun.
Hollow Knight is on sale. Evil Land 2 is on sale. One of those is even half off.
I mean, it's a great time if there were games that you really wanted, but for whatever reason didn't hop on them. But my problem is like, for most games, by the time I've heard about it, I'm just going to go ahead and pick it up. Or I guess the allure of some of these games isn't what it used to be. Mostly because I have so many games in my backlog that adding to that number seems...
The size of my backlog is definitely preventing me from picking up new games on a whim.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess there was another little thing. A 3DS game called Ever Oasis came out yesterday.
It looks really cool.
It is an action RPG town building game. It's kind of neat.
Interesting.
But also, it's a style that I really like, although I guess if you don't like desert in games, you might not. I've yet to see what other environments, if any, it offers. It looks neat, and it's by the people who did the people responsible for the 3DS remasters of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. It's sort of what they did on their own, I guess.
Is it a new IP, or is it connected to something from the past, or...?
It is not connected to any past IP.
Okay, so the games that had Oasis in the name, not connected.
What games are those?
It was an alternate name for, God, I'm trying to remember what series. Like, maybe it was connected to Shining Force?
It's definitely not connected to those in any way.
Yeah, like, there was an alternate name, and, like, all of the Game Gear versions of the games were called Oasis.
Oasis and Beyond Oasis?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, none of those are related.
So is it 3DS only?
3DS only. It's been in development for quite some time.
Oh, I keep seeing ads for it.
This is the point where I say once again that I would be way more interested if it was on the Switch.
Right? Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. Like, I'm interested, but I'd be much more interested if it was on the Switch.
It's just not a Switch game. Like, not high enough resolution for a Switch game.
That's fair.
I am so ready for the Switch to come up with some kind of virtual console implementation. I mean, I feel like surely it has enough horsepower to run, like, anything that the Wii U could have.
Yeah, I really hope they move. GBA games never got a 3DS virtual console, and I really hope they get a Switch virtual console.
Yeah.
There was some good stuff that was left behind there.
Oh, so I did have one thing, sort of not related to other games that we've been talking about, that's been my, like, sort of read about this hobby for the last week or so. Warhammer 40K is doing a new edition, which is not which is not news. Like, this is not...
I mean, it wouldn't be news normally.
It wouldn't be news normally. Like, I wouldn't even be talking... I think we've had this discussion about how I feel about 40K on this podcast in the past. But I do like to keep up with it the way I keep up with a variety of other games, because 40K has always been my, like, go-to example of how to do a minis game badly. Like,
Like, you're not wrong.
Even if you go in for their ludicrously over the top, sort of all over the place, questionable lore, the game itself has been just a rules disaster for decades.
Well, and to be honest, it was never in great shape.
Yeah.
Like every edition has had its problem. Like, the key problem with the original game was the fact that you had to have Rogue Trader, and you had to have all these other little supplement books, and you had to have issues of White Dwarf, and you had to have all of this stuff to make it playable. And then they came out with second edition, and they made it so that casters or hero units were like the only important thing, so you wanted to stack as many of those as possible. And every version has had some major Achilles heel.
Yeah. Once upon a time, Dungeons and Dragons was a game called Chainmail that was a like historical simulation role-playing game, and it had
it was a strategy game.
It was like a strategy. It was billed as a strategy game, and you played. And D&D over the as it became a thing and evolved, what realized that sacrifices to realism needed to be made in the interest of making the game fun and digestible. And, like, you know, I'll make fun of second edition FACO and the utter insanity of rules bloat and power problems in third edition. And, you know, we decided that we didn't want to make D&D. We want to make World of Warcraft, the tabletop game, fourth edition. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, but
like
each
parts of fourth edition,
I do too. I feel like each edition, regardless of whether you liked that particular edition, each edition is moving more towards this is a game that you play. It is not a simulation that you take part in.
Right. Like realizing that the fun takes precedence over.
Yeah.
Crunchy bits.
Yes. Fun is more important than whether you have adequately modeled the effect of this particular kind of weapon hitting at this particular angle in a way that is believable. It's just not important. It's important for a very particular kind of player who is in the extreme minority.
They're called grognards.
And so as a result, and 40K is that same thing from Historicals minis. And Historicals minis are absolutely that. It's not like, I hesitate to even really call them games, because like if you ever read a Historicals rulebook, like a Historical Miniatures rulebook, these are the things that you need to do to adequately recreate the battle of whatever, whatever. You know, these are the colors that we recommend to get the right shades for this time period, and here are the specific numbers and particular types of units, and here is the strategy that the general that you are representing employed in that battle, so you can see how it plays out against this other general that was employing this other strategy, and on and on down the line, where like victory, such that it is did you accurately recreate the battle? And that's where 40K comes from, in the same way that D&D comes from Chainmail.
Chainmail basically was the same thing, just slightly fantasy, and it sort of, yeah.
Yeah, and like there's a reason we played Dungeons and Dragons and not Chainmail 5th edition.
Yep.
But whereas D&D realized that bit about fun over simulation, 40K has staunchly held on to it and has been kind of run by a lot of people who believe in the hobby, not the game, and have openly talked about being opposed to people who play 40K as a game because they want hobbyists to get into it.
Well, I mean, there are elements of 40K that were removed from the game in part because the wrong sorts of people liked them.
Yes.
But didn't Games Workshop get a new CEO like 2 years ago or so.
So yes, so Games Workshop is under new management, which mostly I read about and was like, yeah, whatever. We're not really talking about much change because 40K is a disaster. But as mentioned, because I play other minis games, I like to be able to talk about how much of a disaster, because for all of its flaws, 40K is still one of the biggest minis games out there and is the thing people think of when they think of miniatures games. And so it being able to draw a comparison is really important if I want to like show other people minis games or talk about them or whatever. So I took a look at the 40K 8th edition rules, which come with this interesting caveat about... They come with two interesting things. One is, here's a whole bunch of things that we are trying to do with this edition of the game, including listen to our players and make it more fun for everybody, which have not previously been in their
stated goals.
Also, I may have mentioned, I read their rules online. This is not a thing I have previously ever been able to legally do.
Yeah, seriously. They put the rules online?
They put the rules online.
Holy crap.
You can download. It's a light version of their rule book, but you can download it. It has all of the relevant rules.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the signs of the apocalypse.
And a bunch of other places, one of the blogs that I follow that talks about it, just has like, oh, hey, here's all of the rules for this faction. Here's all of the rules for this faction. And we're like, wait, what? Really? They're not putting the kibosh on that? No, they're apparently not. And so I started looking at them so that I could, I'm not super proud of this, but basically so that I could be up to date when I told people how bad 40K was. And it's not. Like, I do a couple of really basic comparisons. Here's how much this unit costs. Here's how much a Space Marine costs. Here's how much more effective a Space Marine is than that other thing. This is endemic of the game.
Right.
Except they've changed all the stats. All of the stats. Suddenly, that Space Marine is about 10% more effective than that Eldar Dire Avenger for about 10% more points. And vehicle rule. They have 40K people like because it has vehicles. It's one of the only minis games that has, like, you can have tanks and jets and stuff. And so their vehicle rules used to be, hey, from what direction are you shooting this tank? Okay, roll against the armor on that tank in that direction once you're sure that you've hit. And now once you've done that, roll on this other table based on whether or not you met or exceeded that armor value with the strength of your weapon. And then once you've rolled on that table, roll on this other table to see what the effect of the thing that you may or may not have done was.
No.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fun, right?
Yeah, right? Super fun. And so it's like, okay, what that means is you can shoot a tank with a missile launcher and blow off its treads, and then it has a hard time moving. It's got this like granular types of effects. Now, vehicles have hit points. Just vehicles have hit points. Their stats, their relevant stats, movement, accuracy, like shooting accuracy and number of attacks change based on their remaining hit points. Which means that not only is it much more difficult for your tank to get shot off the board before you ever get to use it, because that was definitely a thing that could happen. Like, whoops, I rolled 4 sixes in a row. Your tank is gone. Just gone. You didn't get to use it. I could see it, so I shot it, and now it's gone. So that, which is terrible. That doesn't happen nearly. That doesn't really happen anymore. It's pretty unrealistic, and it's treated just like any other unit. But as it gets more damaged, it's less effective. But you still have it, and so like the end and these sort of detail-y changes, it still feels like 40K. Like it's recognizably 40K for anybody who is a longtime 40K player, but a whole bunch of the details have changed such that it's like more of a game. Previously in the previous edition, every unit, no matter what it was, if it is a guy on foot or somebody in a screaming fast like jet plane moved 6 inches. And if you were one of these other things that you'd think would move faster than somebody walking, you had some table you could roll on to see how much further you might go, which no. Now it's just like, oh, hey, everything has a movement stat. This is how far it moves. And so it's interesting because kind of where I go with this is no matter how bad a game is, it can be fixed. And it often doesn't take, it takes like thoughtful, but not necessarily extensive changes. I don't know if it's a game that I'm going to play, but it is a game that I would play. I also think that it's telling that they have dropped their prices across the board on basically everything.
Well, that really needed to happen.
Yeah.
That's needed to happen for decades.
Yep. So, like, I mean, other thing that would happen with 40K, if you wanted to play a faction, you needed to buy that faction book. That faction book was probably $30.
Like, really not that thick. And
no,
not containing all that much in the way of actual rules.
Yeah. So now, for $20, I have a book with 5 factions in it that happens to have all of the factions that work together in one book, and it's just rules. Just, it is like 180 pages of just rules. There's a couple of pages of pictures, a couple of pages of story, and the rest of it is, here's all the rules, here's everything you need to know, here's quick reference. It is a rules-dense book.
Okay, so the thing that I want to know is, are the miniatures actually sold in unit packs? And what I mean by that is, this was notorious. Like, a unit of Space Marines is 10 Marines. If you went to buy Space Marines, there were 8 in a package.
Well, I think their stated assumption on that was that you would put a couple of non-standards in to fill out the group. But
But still, yeah, like, it's...
From what I can tell, the answer is... Like, I know that in the case of Space Marines, if you buy a box of Marines, you mostly get 10 Marines. There are some exceptions where it's like, hey, these are like super special elite Marines, so you get 5 of them. But 5 is still like a minimum unit rather than a maximum unit.
Right.
But it's not weird numbers.
Yeah, because that was the thing. It's like, it always seemed like it should have been, I want to build this army. I need to buy this box, this box, this box.
It's still
done.
It's still not super great about that, but at least now you get minimum units of things, at least. Sometimes you get more than that. And they like to do bundles, but the bundles are somewhat sane in that you save quite a bit of money buying things as a bundle, and the things you get in the bundle kind of make sense with one another. But I think that's still a thing that they're working on. They do have lovely minis. Like, their quality of their sculpts has continued to go up, and putting them together is great. It is putting together 40K minis at this point is like a half step down from putting together Gundams. Just, you nip all the bits off. You do have to glue them, which you don't have to do for Gundams, but you nip all the bits off. They all fit together. They've got very good instructions, and the end result is this neat looking thing. But I've been very surprised. I feel like they're capitalizing on Privateer Press kind of making a mess of things lately in a way that I don't normally associate with Games Workshop being agile. Oh, another thing that is not standard for Games Workshop games, but has become standard for other minis games that they're doing now, is when they released 8th edition, they released the rulebook and updated rules for every faction.
Oh, all at once?
All at once. Every single Space Marine chapter, every single other non-Space Marine army, every flavor of Eldar, every flavor of Alien, everything, all released at once.
So clearly it's a brave new world in minis games now.
Yeah, it's definitely a brave new something.
Apparently.
There's definitely a, yeah, definitely a brave new something. It's really unclear. Like, when they say it under new management, they really clearly are under new management and have made some kind of foundational changes in how they appear to be approaching the game. I'll continue to see if that is a thing, is actually a thing, but it was very surprising to me to do some basic math on 40K and come out with numbers that actually worked. Now, there's still a great many problems that 40K has, but...
But, like, they seem to be an actual game with balanced rules?
Yeah. Like, previously I would have said, this game is a disaster, it exists because it's got nostalgia value and has been there, has been around forever, and it's got all of these deep, deep, ridiculous problems that just aren't ever going to get better. And they definitely seem to be making some things better.
I would wager there are some old school 40K players screaming their heads off about these changes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are some bitter, salty tears coming from the community, and they sustain me. But everybody, even longtime 40K players who actually wanted it to be, like, at least
some of those players would like to continue to have a game that people play long term.
And a lot of the people who were actually interested in 40K as a game and weren't interested in, like, weren't
simulation.
Like simulation hobbyists are like, oh wow, these rules are the best 40K we've ever seen.
In particular, this might make the game more appealing to the people who came in initially from the fiction.
Yeah.
Which I think has been an ever-growing contingent. Because boy, is there a lot of 40K fiction out there.
It's true.
It is pulpy as hell.
And the other thing that I've noticed is they have done a lot to make it possible for you to play whatever you want without it being broken or unplayable. And it's not ridiculously complicated or requires like six different rule books or whatever. Like, oh, hey, do you want to play a whole bunch of guys on jet bikes and floating tanks? Sure. Do you want to play, you know, a giant swarm of alien bugs? Sure. Do you want to play the opposite? Do you want to play only like a handful of super huge alien bugs? Okay, you can do it. We'll make it happen.
Probably still not allowed to play Space Dwarves, though.
You're still not allowed to play Space Dwarves, which is...
I don't know why they got rid of squats.
Because the wrong people like squats.
Yeah. Yep.
That is explicitly why they did it.
They were awesome. I mean, but like, my fetish army list was always Adeptus Arbites, which are basically Judge Dredd. Not super useful, but I mean, they're Judge Dredd people with shotguns.
I'm pretty sure you can do it. I mean, I don't know specifically if you can do it, but I'm pretty sure you can do it.
I don't even know if they still make the sculpts of them.
Yeah, I mean, if they exist, you can do it.
Like, there's a lot of stuff from the elder archives of Citadel miniatures that just doesn't exist anymore, like Zotes.
I don't know what that is.
Which are weird centaur lizard things.
Weird.
That are cybernetically enhanced.
All right.
I mean, I'm annoyed that they haven't gotten around to making space lizard men, but that's a separate issue.
Red space lizard men would look really cool, and it wouldn't be all that weird from a 40K perspective. 40K is kind of a weird game.
I googled Warhammer 8th edition Adeptus Arbites, and it's on the list of armies that really ought to be brought back. So are the Zotes, and so are they who shall not be named.
Wow.
which I'm going to go out on a limb and guess is squats.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. Why should squads... Why are squads so reviled?
Squats. Squats are space dwarves, and mostly it's because Americans like squats. And they're also... They were one of the remnants of original 40K, back when 40K was humorous and goofy, before it started taking itself far too seriously.
Yes. So the bit where 40K is, where the universe of 40K is like the cover of a metal album, is like playing in a metal album cover.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is a joke that at one point they were aware of and were making. Like,
yeah, that was the joke. 40K was basically straight out of 2000 AD.
Because...
Like the comic that Judge Dredd came from.
Yeah.
There's like, a reason the Arbites existed.
Yeah, 40K... 40K was a sci-fi, like a pulpy sci-fi answer to Heinlein and hard sci-fi that was going on at the time. Because it was like, hey, what if we took Heinlein and made it utterly ridiculous? Just turned it all the way up to 11. Like, what
I mean, and squats had things like thud guns and trike squads and
yeah. So basically, you know, and there were the Jokero, which are intelligent psychic space orangutans.
I mean, orcs are still pretty jokey.
Orcs are the only thing allowed to be funny in modern 40K.
Yeah. They basically, yeah, and that was the thing, was like they started stripping out, they wanted to be taken seriously, so they started stripping out all of the like ridiculous things.
And they couldn't strip out orcs because people loved them too much, because orcs are basically football hooligans, but yeah. Green.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Space Marine joke was that Space Marines are like a 13-year-old's imagining of a super soldier.
Yeah.
Like, that's the joke. And now that's just what they are.
With all sorts of weird organs that are attached to their body that all do different things.
Yeah.
Yes. They can spit acid, eat anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, a 13-year-old's imagining of a super soldier. And like, honestly, I think 40K would be a lot more fun if it didn't take itself seriously, but here we are.
Ah, and yes, and they who shall not be named are indeed the squats, because every time that someone mentions their name, Games Workshop delays them by another year. So they're currently delayed until out around 2218.
And behind the scenes, there's like a black market for the remaining squats models that people trade furiously. I mean, and the game, the atmosphere of the game just changed so much from its original intent, and I think that's the problem. Like, if you open up the Rogue Trader book, the original Rogue Trader, there's a whole section on functionally kit bashing and making vehicles on your own, and like, they show making a vehicle out of a deodorant can, and making another vehicle out of, like, you know, some other container.
I really... And
here's the rules to make this vehicle.
And some of them were, like, some of them were themselves jokes. Like the fact that almost everything that they were talking about kit bashing involved an empty container of some kind of personal grooming product.
Yeah.
Like, they loved to do that. Hey, all the soap containers that you're not using, here's what you could do with them, by the way.
And that original atmosphere flies straight in the face of the rules of you can't use it unless it's Citadel.
Yep.
Yeah.
They realized that they couldn't charge you money for your deodorant container.
I mean, I may be wrong at this, but I believe when 40K originally came out, Games Workshop and Citadel Miniatures were not one in the same. Citadel Miniatures was a miniature company that made stuff to support these games, not they were, you know, the same company.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're correct.
Because there's also like Marauder Miniatures that was another company that made, you know, Warhammer Fantasy miniatures and eventually got consumed by Citadel.
Yeah, so basically Games Workshop provided the funding to found Citadel, but it was a separate company for quite a while. Until it was eventually absorbed by Games Workshop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am so far gone from miniature gaming. Like, I gave away most everything I had that was 40K to a coworker who plays the game with his son. And I figured it would actually see some use that way. And that would give them some stuff that they're never going to see anywhere else. Because, like, I had some Zotes. I had some various other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I checked out of... like I have Infinity for my sci-fi game, and I dabble in Bushido for my fantasy game, and I really don't like, I don't play those two as much as I think I'd like, so I'm not really looking. I might, you know, pick up a few and paint them because their minis are fun to paint, and a change from their sci-fi without the extensive tiny details in an Infinity miniature, which I dearly love, but are sometimes overwhelming. So it's like kind of fun to paint, and so I might do some of that, but pretty unlikely to be getting into 40K other than a small number of models. Just don't have the like capacity to get into that. But I do like reading their rules. Kind of like reading the rule books for tabletop RPGs that I'll never actually get around to playing.
Well, I suppose we should probably wrap things up, unless we have any objections to that.
Nope.
Well, join us next week when I think we're going to record the Game of the Month show.
That's the current plan.
Yep.
Unless it slides again. Anyway, hopefully you enjoyed the show, and especially if you're enjoying Stormblood, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.